Welcome to a special bonus edition of the Hard Truth podcast, Inside the Football Industry. It's with me, Philip Heidson, and with Peterborough United, El Presidente, Darren McAnthony. And we're breaking a promise here. I think we said last week that we'll be taking the week off. Here we are, December 28th. We're back recording again.
Well, listen, I'm locked up. You're busy floating around Disney every day, but it sounds like living your life. And I can't even get out to watch football. So, you know, with all the lockdowns and tier restrictions, my one saving grace was football, and that was taken away from me as well. So it's just like fucking, honestly. But yeah, anyway, it's all good.
We're prompted by Alan Swan from the Peterborough Telegraph. I think he's not got anything because there's no football. There's nothing to write about. So, you know, let's see if we can make some news today that's going to fill some papers for the next few days.
Yeah, I got to be careful because his headlines sometimes can be a little bit controversial and put me in trouble. So I got to be like, I got to tread. Mind you, I got nothing really to say. Do you know what I mean? It's Monday today. Our players are back in today. So they all tested this morning. I believe we got the all clear from the test we did. So they're back in training. So isolation worked and obviously onwards and upwards. So, but now Doncaster have got issues. Yeah. So I think our game on Saturday might be called off.
You're all ready to play and you got no one to play against.
Do you know what? I'll probably be 50 by the time we get back playing football again. It's mental, you know? And it's like someone said to me the other day, which is really bizarre. When we went into this run of fixtures, if the season stopped, we would be screwed again in 7 points per game. Mm-hmm. And since teams have played, if it stopped today, we'd now be 6th.
Okay.
On points per game.
It's funny you mention that because on Saturday before the game, I actually went to calculate your points per game to see where you were. And I saw that you'd just, I think Accrington would leapfrog you into the playoffs.
Yeah.
But I didn't do it after the game.
Apparently we'd be okay now, so which is astonishing. But, you know, we're probably not going to get to play for another 2 weeks. So it's fucking weird. I don't know. We'll be probably 12th by the time we get back to playing. It's still my fucking nutter now.
You just need a couple more wins on the board to feel a bit more comfortable.
Do you know what? Fuck all that. We're finishing the season. So, but no, I just want to get back to playing, you know, and seeing some football. And I mean, obviously I've watched shitloads on TV. Listen, let's talk Bradford because that's the form team.
We'll fill the next half an hour with the Bradford podcast this week.
Very good, very good, very good.
Never have I been so happy to be 18th in League 2.
They had a good win again, Boxing Day?
Yeah, so we beat, let's see, what is it today, 28th. So the last game was Tranmere. We beat Tranmere away.
Tough place to go to.
Yeah, and I think, you know, while Keith Hill at Tranmere may argue otherwise, I think we deserved it. At least we deserved a good point and... but got all three, and it's 3 wins in a week for us. We'd only won 3 games all season until last week. So it's been a nice turnaround. Long may it continue.
And again, showing that, you know, players can let managers down very quickly. Mm-hmm. I presume it's pretty much the same set of players playing.
Yeah, you know, Stuart was unlucky that there was particularly like Lee Novak is somebody who has been injured for a long time and who we really missed somebody like him up front. He's come back, made a big difference. We've had a couple that shouldn't have been anywhere near that team, but we had to keep playing them and we have the ability to drop them and they've been nowhere near and they'll probably never play for us again. So we it's this confluence of injuries starting to recover a little bit, changing formation, a bit more pragmatic. Players know what they're doing rather than centre halves try to be wingers. And, you know, the players obviously decided that they want it, whereas perhaps they didn't want it quite so badly before.
Now you're on the precipice of, which happened to me, you can make the ultimate mistake or it could be inspired whereby if you keep the caretaker duo in, you know, see how far it gets you. I made the mistake, we had a caretaker in and he won 5 and 7 or whatever else, so I gave him the job.
Yeah.
Part of me was really like, nah, he's probably not ready for that job. And as it turned out the following season after 6 games or something, I fired him. So, you know, would you want this duo as your permanent managers?
It's such a hard question. Like, I understand the predicament that the club are in and, you know, do you stick or twist? So you got these two who are the youth under 18s. They're the only managing, the only staff in the club that have really achieved anything the last few years because we do have a good crop of youngsters coming in.
Yeah.
They're 18 and, sorry, they're 28 and 32 between the two of them. So they're a young duo. Things have really turned around, but it's like, I still have this feeling. I mean, I'm really happy, of course, to be getting the points on the board. And there's nobody that's inspired me, you know, when we've been talking about potential managers to come in. You know, what's out there? There isn't a ton of managers out there that seem particularly interesting. But on the other hand, it's like riding this wave of momentum. but at some point it's going to burst and we have no idea how they're going to respond and react to that.
Sure.
So I'm happy for them to continue. We put out a statement today, which was kind of a strange statement, saying they're now upgraded to interim managers from caretakers, which not really sure, you know, tomatoes.
Yeah.
It seems to be there's nobody else better and we're doing well at the moment. So let's see how long we can make that last.
Yeah, I guess, look, the new CEO is in a good position where just, you know, let it carry on for as long as you can. If there's no immediate rush, great. It gets you away from the danger zone. Okay, you get to January. The danger there is then who recruits the players in January. But look, I always said to you, it's going to take probably three windows to fix the issue. Yeah. So for me, probably the right decision is to let it flow for now. Why would you change a winning formula per se? And you know what? Even if they stayed till the end of the season and you got up into the top half, look, you might make a promotion run. It's not too late. But even if you didn't, let's say you finished 10th, 11th, 12th, then you can press the reset button in the summer and you can see who's available in the summer. So not a bad thing. Probably looking in hindsight, statement probably wouldn't be needed. It would be just keep them on their toes and just say carry on as is.
Yeah, I think they wanted to send a message that, you're not going to be managing on a game-by-game basis. So, you know, maybe you can think a little bit longer term.
Yeah, keep them honest. Because the minute I did it and I put that manager in, it's the form tapered off. So I would have maybe just kept them honest and gone, have at it, you know, and that's just the way it is. But that's just me.
And you never quite know whether this is just a blip. So we, in our relegation season 2 years ago, when we came down to League Two, we were like awful. And then we had this purple patch of probably a month in December, January, where we looked like Real Madrid. I think we beat Rochdale 4-5-0 and it just seemed like it all clicked and you're suddenly patting yourself on the back thinking, okay, we got this. No matter if that run started, it finished and we went back to form. So, you know, I think I wouldn't want to say, hey, we're looking upwards now when we've got the worst of it behind us, because you never know how quickly things can turn.
This is football.
Yeah. So yeah, it's a predicament, but there's nobody that I would have chosen over them right now based on all the names that I've seen.
Adrian Durham, who's a TalkSport and Posh fan, he tweeted to Swanee today something about your CEO had bragged about having the Premier League money, was going to use it as a war chest for January. Did he say that?
So I haven't seen those words. I think that what we have said all along is that we underspent in the summer. And so there's money to be spent. So there is definitely money to strengthen. We brought in Lee Turnbull as a recruitment manager, and that he's been working behind the scenes for a few weeks, but that finally got announced today. You know, we'll see how that goes. His track record, you know, he's been at Chesterfield and at Scunthorpe, and I think the jury's out, but let's see what he's got up his sleeve and see what January brings. But at least the good thing, I think, is what they're doing is detaching recruitment from coaching. So, you know, at least it not being all based on, you know, what the Rolodex the manager looks like, which is, you know, frankly what it was before.
Yeah, it's got to be that way. It's got to be that way. The best way to recruit.
Yeah. So now we kind of joked about it last time we recorded about people talking about the playoffs. Well, you know, that talk is getting stronger now as people say, well, we're, you know, not even halfway through the season, we're 8 points off the playoffs and we're closer to the playoffs than we are relegation.
I remember Bournemouth years ago were a bit of a laughing stock in League One. You know, stuff about the new owner's wife in the dressing room, you know what I mean, running down screaming at the players. And Eddie Howe came back and I think they won like 17 and 18 games to go on a run from like 18th and finished like in the automatics. So anything's possible in football. Momentum is such a wonderful thing and it's like keeping that momentum going as long as you can. So who knows? Only you know how good your squad is. Is it a promotion squad? You know, and then what difference do signings make in January? Is it a good effect or a bad effect?
Yeah, I think when you look at our squad, I think at the beginning we thought it's probably a mid-table squad. So I feel like at the moment we're just reverting to the mean and let's see if January can take us, you know, further. But it's nice to talk about some wins for once in a while, you know, and be a little bit happier on a Saturday or a Tuesday. We have a couple of home games coming up too.
I was chuffed here. I was watching the Sky tape and I saw the goal against Tranmere. I was like, oh, there we go. Phil's going to be happy. Who have you got at home next two games?
So we've got Port Vale at home tomorrow. So as this pod goes out, it'll have been yesterday. And then we got Markham at home. Okay. Port Vale are only a place or two above us. You know, they've been struggling.
Yeah, they have. Markham are good. Markham are good.
Yeah, they're in the playoffs.
Yep, good right team. Now. Yeah, so that'll be interesting. Okay, good test. See what it's like this week and, you know, hopefully a couple of wins for Bradford and then you'll be thinking automatic promotion by January.
Yeah, well, I'll be booking my flights for the playoff final.
You won't be allowed to come.
No.
I'm joking.
Well, then I'll be setting off on a boat in March then.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. All right. Well, look, enough about Bradford for now.
Yeah.
Let's talk Big Sam. Fucking asshole, you know, like going to Anfield and doing what he does. I fucking hate that guy. Honest to God. Did you watch that game yesterday?
I didn't see the game. Was it like 5 minutes to go that West Brom equalized?
Basically, Liverpool had in the first half 92% possession, but typical Big Sam team. He's had a week with them now. They just dog it. You know, bankers, six at the back, four in front. Look, honest truth is Liverpool are crap, in my opinion. You know, they had loads of possession, but the West Brom goalie made one save. Whereas Liverpool, probably their goalie, had to make two good saves. Do you know what I mean? So it was when West Brom did come out and have to play in the second half. You know, again, Joel Matip goes out. You know, he plays and he goes down with an injury. He's made a glass. That guy needs to be called glass, as he's just made a glass. And if the Liverpool owners don't sign a centre-half, if not two in January, that's going to be a real problem, in my opinion. I said Man City. I still think Man City. Now I'm starting to think Man City will win the league title.
Now, have you heard any rumours of signings? Is there anything in the press that suggested who they're going after?
I personally think they won't sign anyone.
No.
I think when I see their business in the summer and the way they spread the payments and the way they had to sell younger players to do it, I don't think they're going to have the money to do a signing, so, which is amazing for a team that's just won the league and won the Champions League the year before. But Fenway have never professed to be big spenders anyway. It's always been a net spend thing based on selling a Coutinho or selling a player. So I just... I can't see them spending 50 million on a centre half. I think it'd be a big mistake because, you know, that is a problem area. And that'll be an issue for me because Man City suddenly are there, thereabouts.
What's all this business about Mo Salah being unhappy? Is that just tabloid talk?
Yeah, I just think that's his agent wanting an extra 100 grand a week from. But I guess Liverpool, look, they recruit based, you know, on younger players. And I guess they're getting to the point where Firmino, I think, is 30. Mo Salah is 28. Mane is probably 28, 29. You know, eventually, obviously, they got Jota, but eventually you got to look at that and go, you know, if Real Madrid offer 150 million for Mo Salah, is that good business? And you go out and get, three players of 50.
You got to keep recycling it, don't you?
Yeah, but, you know, but Salah's so important because of the goals. I mean, you know, he drives you mad with the misses, but he's so important. So I don't know. I guess, look, that's tomorrow's problem. And I guess, look, if Liverpool win another title this year, then I guess the owners have got a decision and say, well, you know what? Maybe we will sell a player like that. We just had a couple of titles and, you know, fans won't get on our backs. It's always about timing, isn't it? Do you know what I mean? And whatever else, you know. Look, the Premier League's really interesting because you got Man United, you got Man City, you got Tottenham, Chelsea. Lampard's reverting to type as I've been very critical of him because I don't rate him as a manager. Look, if that continues, they're going to have to bomb him out because if that was a foreign manager in that job, he'd be fired already for the money they've spent. I watched that Arsenal game the other day with them. You've got Leicester obviously going strong. Aston Villa are flying. It's a very, very competitive league.
Southampton, have they dropped off? I haven't seen the table in a couple of weeks.
Yeah, they've had a couple of like ropey results, I think, a draw and a loss, but I still think they'd be top eight. You know, like I said, it's a really, really competitive league. So for us to drop points to West Brom and Anfield with the game, we've got three away games coming up. That's a bad, bad result. Because the other thing is as well, I think we'd had 5-6 days without playing. So you can't even argue like we'd played too many games and it was a tired performance. So I'm sure Klopp was like raging.
It's one game at the end of the day.
It is one game. But the other thing you'd be critical of Klopp sometimes as well is that you've got Shaqiri on the bench. And the game was crying out for some creativity in that way. You know, the front three weren't penetrating. Shaqiri is one of them. He gets in pockets. It's like a Jota. He can open up the space. He can do whatever. And he brings on Oxlade-Chamberlain. And, you know, it's kind of like, well, you know what? Maybe you got what you deserved. So, you know, you got a bench for a reason. You know, the problem Liverpool have got is they're playing young Curtis Jones. He made a mistake. He's a brilliant young player, but he made a really sloppy mistake. You'd like to see Keita get a run because he played well in the last game. They won 7-0. But again, I think he's injured. He's another player made of glass. Do you know what I mean? So I've said this before. They've got a few too many players. Oxlade-Chamberlain's been out for 5 months again. Made of glass. They've got three or four in there. Lallana going to Brighton. I said for years he was made of glass. What were Brighton doing giving him a three-year deal? I mean, I think he came off again at halftime yesterday in the game. I don't know how many games he's played. But I sometimes wonder clubs like West Ham, who made the decision to give Jack Wilshere a three-year deal? Like, I've touched upon this in recruitment before about data and analytics. And
you know their background, their history.
You know a player of his glass. You know a player is like an Andy Carroll. You know if you sign Andy Carroll, you'd probably get 15 games a season if you're lucky out of them. You know a Jack Wilshere. These are all terrific players, and I know I sound harsh, but they are. The history predicts that they're not going to play a full season. So you know you're going to have issues. It's like Joel Matip at Liverpool, who's always been a little bit like that. Someone gave him a four-year deal. You know, he plays a game, he misses a game. He's 29, he's not 39.
It's like hope. Or we hope that for us it's going to be different.
We had this in the past. We had a player years ago, and you knew if he got a broken toenail, and he did, and he was missing for like 6 months. Mm-hmm. And we had another player called Gabby Zakuani, who you knew if he lost a toe, if he lost a finger, if he lost an eye, if he lost an ear, he'd play the following game.
Yeah.
George Boyd played his whole career without really a serious injury. Played, I don't know, 500 games at the highest level. Some players are just built physically and mentally stronger than other players. And then you've got other players who get a little nick or a little feel, or they feel something and they just can't play. And I guess that's down to the mental strength. That's down to physicality. That's just the way it is. But you know what? If you're signing a 25, 26, 27-year-old, you can tell by their first 8 years in football what kind of person they are.
Yeah, it's not that they just had a couple of injuries at the beginning of their career and then got back on track. We have somebody as well, you know, Zeli Ismail, he's called, who has been around the lower leagues for a long time. But again, expect, you know, he plays for a game and he's out for another 8 weeks with a hamstring injury. And exactly the same thing happened. He came to us first year, and but we'd given him an option for a second year, which of course he took up gladly. It's interesting what you say about mentality versus the physical aspect, how oftentimes it's not somebody who's physically injured, but mentally they put themselves in a position where they can't play.
Correct. And we've had that where I remember once we had it was an away trip years ago, and we had a young player who refused to get off the bus. The doctor had cleared him to play. It was fine, but he still felt his ankle, or he still felt whatever. And everyone got so angry with him. This was such an important game. In fact, I want to say we were playing Bradford, because I remember traveling up to the game. We won anyway, but he refused to play.
I was about to congratulate him for staying on the bus. It didn't matter.
Yeah, but he was like, you know, again, well, and now he's not even playing in the league anymore. You know what I mean? Yeah. So sometimes, like, you know, when people say they would give like a right leg or a right arm to play football, mm-hmm. and you see some players and, you know, the doctors, the physios tell you there's nothing wrong with them. They're fine. They, you know, they have to play through the pain. Sometimes you have to play with pain. You have to get on with it. Look, in sports and in elite sports, in my opinion, no one's 100% fit. You're always going to have, typically after 2-3 months of the season starting, you're always going to have an ailment. You're always going to have a problem. You're always going to have a sore back, a sore hammy, a sore, an arse, a sore whatever. You're never going to be 100%. But those who go out and play 50, 60 games every year, credit to them, because they are built mentally stronger than the players who play 20, 25 games a year.
Now, what does that do in the dressing room? You know, when you have a player who is perhaps a little shy of playing, if they feel that they've got a twinge or they're hurt or something, does that create a dynamic in the dressing room where the rest of the players are like looking at that saying, what the heck, you know, I'm running through glass and here you are kind of taking the easy way out?
My answer would be, I don't really know. I've never really asked the player. I mean, it's an interesting point. You know, you look at the guy next to you and you go, well, I can't rely on him, you know, or, you know, we're getting to the nitty gritty end of the season.
Are you really in for this? Because, you know, I'm giving my everything.
Yeah, correct. And I guess that comes down to why some players go to the top or have better careers than other players, because mentally they can just do it. They're at it and they want to play through the pain and they'll deal with the pain and whatever. You know, look, I played rugby years and years ago at a good level for my school, and I always had dodgy ankles. You know, I've broken my ankles 4 times. So whether it's my height, whatever, but I always had sore ankles playing. It didn't stop me putting the boots on because I wanted to go out and play. And you know, it wasn't going to be damage that would last. Look, if it was something where you had a serious injury which could finish your career, I can understand. But if it's a sore back or if it's a tight glute or if it's a whatever else, you know, get on with it. Get out and play. This is what you're paid to do. It's a short career. It's like, you know, me and the missus were laughing the other day about like Christmas Day. You know, a lot of managers nowadays, modern day managers, don't train on Christmas Day. And my missus was like, well, if you're married to a footballer, you kind of know what you signed up for, which is
comes
with a territory that you're going to, you know, your husband's going to be gone on Christmas Day for a few hours. You know what I mean? And me and my manager have had rows about this over the years about, you know, why aren't we training on Christmas Day? And believe it or not, this was our first Christmas. We were going to be training on Christmas Day. And then obviously the whole COVID thing struck. So, you know, this is what you're paid to do. This is your career. It's a very short career. And there's plenty of time when you're 32, 33 to spend Christmas at home. Because, you know, the odds are you could be unemployed and not having any income, you know, and there's a lot of footballers this Christmas would have been out of work.
Now, talking about injuries, it may seem a bit random, but I want to talk about Jermaine Anderson.
Yeah, Yeah, yeah.
Alan Swan makes another appearance. He tweeted something at the weekend about
he scored two goals.
I mean, scoring a couple of goals, yeah. And you know, I responded saying, you know, Christmas miracle, because he played for us and he was awful. Mm. And I didn't really realize that he had such there was such promise, and he had bad injuries, because we only saw the other side of that. And he was in a relegation team where, you know, we really didn't like any of them, to be honest.
At 16, 17, he was a fucking Rolls Royce. I mean, a Rolls Royce. And we knew it coming through. We got him from Arsenal at 14 or 15. And he made his debut for us at 16. And then at about 18, I think, 18, 19, Graham Wesley was manager. And he was that powerhouse in central midfield. We had that run where we were in the top three, top four. We won 6-7 in a row. We were playing champagne football with a diamond. He was playing in all positions in a diamond. But what he had added to his game was goals. He had 6 goals in 7 games in League One. And we were getting bids from Sheffield Wednesday, Brentford, Bournemouth had verbally inquired. We knew we were going to get probably, we turned down about 2 million. We were going to get 4 or 5 million by the end of January. And then he did his ACL. And when he came back from the ACL, again, he looked like a Rolls Royce in training. I mean, he was this powerful young player. I think I used to call him Yaya, you know, was my joke. He could go from 90 yards, box to box. He could score a goal, technically wonderful. A physical presence. He was growing and growing as a young, and a great kid, great attitude. And he did his ACL again on the other knee. And that was it then. He was never the same. And I was devastated for the kid. We gave him an extra year's contract when we probably shouldn't have. At our level, he was gone. And then we moved him on to you. We didn't get a fee. You guys took over his wages, which wasn't a lot. And obviously, he couldn't do it at Bradford either. But I know he was in a shit team and whatever else at the time he went in.
Yeah, I mean, the whole team were not the best. And so he wasn't coming into a good situation.
Yeah. So to see him score again, and I would love that kid to get a second chance. Mm-hmm. I seriously love it. I mean, I spent so much time studying charts, reports on his knees, the ACLs, because he was a great kid. He was one of our youth teamers. He was a big asset to the football club. Him and Jack Baldwin were two that we probably lost about £8 million on because of ACLs and bad injuries. And two players who, without a doubt, could have played a lot higher. Mm-hmm. Some people get ACLs and come back, no problem. Some people get them and they just have lost a yard of pace. They've, you know, you do both of them, and then it's the mental. Now, there's a player, we talk about people who don't want to play through pain. He would have played through pain. In fact, I think he finished a game when he'd done his ACL. You know, and I would never have said that about him, that he'd be one who wouldn't want to play. He'd want to run through a brick wall. So, yeah, I was smiling when I saw his name come up on the Sky ticky tape or whatever they call it, you know, the ticky tape for goals. So, yeah, there's a crossover from us to Bradford. But unfortunately, yeah, hopefully, I don't know, what is he now? He must be 25. 24, 25.
Yeah, I think when he came to us, he's probably, I don't know, he may be one of those players that was around for a long time, so you always think that he's older than he really is, you know, because I just thought it's probably like mid to late 20s, but maybe that's getting a little bit, maybe
I would say 24. So you know what, if he does it, he's an older shot. If he does well there and he gets another chance and physically he's okay, brilliant, because he had it all. I mean, a player who had it all. So, yeah, good luck to him.
Now, an injury like an ACL, is there something that determines whether you're going to be able to come back from that or not? Or is it all down into the healing? Is it the way that the injury happened? Is it, can you tell from the off? And can you tell ACLs apart, I guess, is a good way of putting it, when they're done, when you do them?
I think the answer is yes, because in some cases, it's not just the ACL. You can tear the ACL, the MCL, and do other damage to the same knee. So then it's all about how the operations go and how the knee then rehabilitates. Sometimes it's about then the player's ability to come back and be, you know, strong and come back from it. We had Jason Naismith. He did both ACLs, but he came back really quickly and strong. Fair play to him. I think, you know, we've always had the best surgeons to work on knees for our players, but we've been unfortunate. The two we've had, the bad ones, they never really come back and been the same. I think if your game's based on pace, if you do an ACL or an Achilles tendon, it's really, really difficult to get that yard of pace back. And that can be tough. But in fairness to a player like, I think, Callum Wilson has done both ACLs, and it hasn't affected him. He's managed to come back strong. Alan Shearer did one years ago. Other players, Jamie Redknapp did his. He never recovered from it. He was always injury prone afterwards. So I don't know. Maybe it's the genetics. Maybe it's the body. You know, other people recover better than some. Who knows?
Now, do you, as a club, do you have insurance against injuries like that? Or what can you insure against from a player's perspective? can you insure against the player?
Yeah, you can go out and buy transfer insurance if you lose value on a player, if you get seriously injured. It's very expensive. So, you know, clubs in League 1 and League 2 don't have that. We have medical insurance, so we can get them the best surgery. We can get them the best specialist who will deal with that. The rehabilitation that takes place afterwards. It can be also frustrating. Like Naismith got injured last year on loan at a club. And of course, you know, they pay up to the point the loan's over. But then there's 7-8 months afterwards where we're paying the player to rehabilitate for an injury he got. Maybe they need to look at that change in law.
Mm-hmm.
But if a player suffers while out on loan, the loan club should really continue paying the player's wages as an idea.
Now, when someone gets injured on loan, we've got one right now on loan from Leeds. You know, as soon as he picks up the injury, he basically went back to Leeds to get his rehab done by his parent club. And then, you know, when he's fingers crossed, you know, he gets over his injury, he'll come back and, you know, continue the loan. Is that kind of standard practice?
Yeah, you're paying his wages still. Sometimes Barry's been great where he's been able to get on and get favours out of clubs when they cancel a loan. And they take the player. We had a player from Swansea, I want to say it was, from Swansea or Cardiff a couple of years ago. Steve Evans signed him. He got injured pre-season. He was going to be out for a long time. Barry's relationship with the club, mate, they cancelled the loan, so we were off the hook for the wages.
Yeah.
But a lot of the time, if you're still on the hook for the wages, they'll go back and rehabilitate because those clubs have better facilities.
Yeah.
So they'll go back there, they rehabilitate, and then we'll get them again. Josh Knight we had from Leicester. Twice he got a bad injury. Twice he went back to Leicester. And then when Leicester rehabilitated him, he was ready, he was sent back to us. Do you know what I mean? So that's just the way it works.
So what else have you been up to then? You've had no football, obviously family Christmas. What's keeping you busy?
Yeah, I'm just working, you know, planning. I start doing my, you know, list of resolutions for the new year, things I want to achieve, things I want to do. You know, looking at the January window, been on with Baz today. I'm speaking to the manager now about trying to get games rescheduled because we've got slots opening up and we're going to end up with like 30-odd league games to get done in like, you know, a short, ridiculous amount of time. So stuff like that, you know, obviously the family's still here. Hopefully they're going to get out of here on Friday and get back to the States. They've got school, you know, the following week.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'll get down to the club because obviously I know we're in the tier thing, but, you know, I can still go to work. So I'll head down to the club, spend a couple of days down there, do a bit of work. And hopefully get back to watching some games, you know, because that's really why I stay behind to do. And I don't know how long this clown over here is keeping everyone in these tiers and locked up and the national lockdown, whatever the fuck they're doing. I think their scientists were saying they want a harder lockdown and, you know, whatever. All I want to see is articles and headlines and videos on vaccinations because that's the positive news everyone wants. And that's all we should be talking about.
It'll be one of those things where, you know, out of the blue, he'll come out and say, oh, all the tears are gone in 24 hours. And you don't really sure when that's going to happen, so you can't plan for it. And then, you know, whether that's sometimes in the middle of March or whether it's, you know, next week, who really knows.
I mean, they're talking about, I think, yeah, keeping kids from school, you know, and whatever, which is just like, you know, all the stuff that's happened to us in business and football is bad. But the school thing is the one thing I lost my shit on in America with my kids.
Mm-hmm.
And them now doing that to kids here in school and whatever else. Go after the one age group that basically has 100% chance of fucking survival. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, that's really where all your energy should be. Instead of just saying, we've got the vaccines, we need to vaccinate 12 million people over the age of 60 in the UK, and they need to basically for the next 20 days stay in until they get vaccinated. That's just the honest play now. It's the obvious play. I've been saying this for ages now. The, you know, we've done the one size fits all approach where everyone has to be punished and stay indoors. Now we're getting to this stage we spoke earlier. People now need to be a little bit more aggressive with this now and speak up and go, nah, you just can't do this anymore to us. But feel free to keep those most vulnerable away from us until they're vaccinated because they're the ones that matter on the vaccination front. Let's get them vaccinated. Unless you live in America where they're doing a completely different vaccination rollout.
I think, you know, each state is making it up as they go along.
They are fucking moral.
Funny, we were saying, you know, not to belabor the point, but we were saying before we started to record that, you know, we've known for months and months that there will come a day when there needs to be a vaccination rollout. And we've also known for months and months and months that supply chain and logistics is going to be the roadblock or the enabler. So it's somewhat surprising to see that we're now making things up as we go along on who's actually going to get it.
I read the other day there was only something like 500 centres for vaccination in the UK. Are you fucking kidding me? You've known you've needed to vaccinate like obviously 60 million people eventually.
Every Boots and every W.H. Smiths and everything in that.
100%, you know. Phil. All joking aside, you've got 12 million people to vaccinate quickly. They're the ones that matter. If you vaccinate them, everyone else can get on with their fucking lives.
Yeah.
So why the fuck is in the army, you know, because I don't know where the British Army is, because I would be like this: if you shorten resources, why don't you put a doctor with an army unit and go around and vaccinate 12 million fucking people? Get it done. Mm-hmm. Set up whatever you got to do. Use football stadiums, use concert halls. But let me tell you right now, there's no way that should take longer than a month. Like, that should be like done like that.
Yeah, the constraint should be availability of supply of the vaccine, not actually vaccinating.
Correct. Well, I followed the vaccine tracker in America. 10 million doses have been supplied and only 2.5 million have been vaccinated. That's not on. That's bullshit. That should be like straight away done. You know what I mean? So, you know, but frightening, in the UK, they're only doing 20,000 a day. But they're the press conferences I want to see. The Oxford vaccine came out and they've now got their efficacy up to 94-95%. That wasn't on TV in a big way yesterday. Boris Johnson, they're the press conferences you want
to
see.
That's huge news.
That's massive news. Hey, we've got your vaccine. We've got to get 12 million people done. Forget about all the tears for a minute. This is our plan for the next 3 weeks. Yeah, it's starting to look up, guys. No, instead, we want to hear about South African mutant viruses and COVID that have got into the UK and other variants of virus. And let's keep kids home from school and let's destroy the economy a bit longer. Honest to God. I tell you what, these are all a bunch of fucking useless clowns, I'll tell you, in charge. And hopefully now, millions of people have had enough. I said to you earlier, you know, if I were restaurant owners, I would get together with groups of 1,000 restaurant owners, and I'd fucking open. I'd open. I'd just go, fuck all of you. You haven't got enough police to shut us all down. So from here on in, as a restaurant industry, we're fucking open for business, and go fuck yourself.
Yeah, we were saying off mic, you know, it has to be collective, because, you know, one restaurant tries to do it here and there. We actually had one locally around the corner from us that tried it probably too soon, frankly. But, you know, people came down on them like a ton of bricks and they're out of business now. So when you're doing it one at a time, then you're going to have cancel culture that, you know, knocks on your door. When you're doing it as an industry, then, you know, it becomes a movement rather than an individual business trying to survive.
Right, exactly. And what we've had so far is a movement of people behind couches who love all of this lockdown stuff and who encourage the lockdown stuff and want our kids to stay home and want our businesses in the shitter and want to have universal income, pay income, where you're relying on the government for $500 a week. So you've got loads of people in that reset camp. Well, 2021, we have to fuck those people off, put them in the back of the rearview mirror. And if I was a business owner and I owned a restaurant, I would be lobbying with all my fellow restaurant owners and go, you know what, guys, there's thousands of us. Fuck all of them. We know the signs. We know Florida's open. We know California's not. We can see California's worse than Florida. No science is telling us that restaurants are a massive spreader. So we're all out of business here. Let's just open. Let's just get open and let's see what they can do. Let's see them try their hardest.
So I'm going to wrap up in a minute here, like the bonus episode. And I got a couple of questions to put you on the spot, just reflecting on the year. And it's been a pretty crappy year for a lot of reasons. But I want to know, like, as you look back, you got any highlights? What are you going to take away from 2020 that is a positive?
Probably the highlight would be I don't usually spend as much time with my family as I have this year because I travel a lot. So from, I think, March to... was it August, September? It was the longest period of time in a row I've been with my family because I would have gone every 5 weeks away. So seeing my children grow up a little bit more in detail, spending more time with my missus, really, really good. Good time as well, and having a lot of fun in there at home, you know, kind of thing. Testing my own mental strength, you know, with the challenges, because I've had challenges this year, you know, financially, emotionally, mentally, coming through that. And it was a really shit time there. Meeting you, that was a good highlight, you know, doing the podcast. Touchwood, knowing I've known over now, I think 30 people with COVID personally, and they've all survived. Mm-hmm. So that's, you know, touchwood, you know, long may that continue. And I'm not sure what else, you know, give me a couple of your highlights for the year.
Yeah, I think it's kind of the same what you said about spending time at home, because while I don't do the travel that you do, I will often be out for client work. Like last year, probably from September to January or February, I was on the road nearly every week for various different bits and pieces. So being at home and having that extended period of time, I think, for an introvert like me, has been welcome as well. You know, not having to go out to all these events and conferences sometimes is nice. And now I have an excuse not to do it. I think that, you know, here we are at the end of December and knock on wood, you know, I have a business that still exists. And, you know, given everything that's been thrown at us, I think that it's easy to think that we should grow faster and you should have more impact and all those things. But you look back and see the trail of destruction that this has done and will continue to do, that, you know, I look at that definitely as being a positive. And I've loved doing this. I love doing what we're doing. You know, it's been for me as a, you know, as a football fan, it's fascinating to get an inside look at really what goes on behind the scenes.
Oh, of course.
And so had a great fun doing it.
Fair play on the business, do you know what I mean? So that's really important. So, you know, hopefully you'll have a smashing 2021.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. You know, 2020, it's, you know, it's funny, the last few years, there's always been things where you look back and think, oh, I'm looking forward to the next year. I don't necessarily think you should always think like that, because you should, you know, you should live in the moment and shouldn't have regrets and all that kind of stuff. But certainly looking forward to 2021, turning over on the calendar and, you know, growing the business and just going hopefully from strength to strength. We'll see. Try to be positive.
Sounds like a plan.
So with that then, you know, we will be back next week. We're going to record next Monday. We will actually continue our deep dive into the football finances side of things. But of course, you've got questions, we would always love to hear them. You can just send those over to contact@hardtruthfootball.com or just tag us on any of the social networks or go to the website, hardtruthfootball.com/contact. With that, Dara, have a fantastic new year.
You too, buddy. Enjoy New Year's Eve and your freedom. All right.
And, thank you.
You and the family.
I'll be thinking of you locked up in tier four while we're, you know, in bed asleep with the kids at 10 p.m. on New Year's Eve.
Oh, stop. Yeah, well, listen, everyone out there, Happy New Year's to everyone. Hope everyone's had a great Christmas. And fuck 2020 and let's get on to 2021. Good way to end the pod.
All right. Take care, everybody.
Bye.